basically, futurist as a genre began in reaction to modernity. And the idea, they're essentially, initially were sort of two basic schools of future studies attempting to kind of determine what the future would be like. And one of them was generally referred to as extrapolation positive. And that meant that if we look at all the things that modernity has done, and we try to extrapolate a future, then we're going to get nothing but more good things. And so this is a very positive notion. It's behind the idea of liberal progress and the idea that things are just going to get better and better and better, largely due to science. And that's kind of a whole genre of literature came out of that belief and that viewpoint. And then, of course, there's just sort of almost the exact opposite, which started to look at modernity and see nothing but the disenchantment of the world and then increasingly things like environmental degradation and flatland view. The romantic view came in and criticized modernity for cutting off all feelings and all emotions. And so when they extrapolated this kind of situation forward, then they saw a very negative future, sort of a kind of Blade Runner future. And that was generally referred to as the negative extrapolation school. And both of them, oddly, tended to leave out spirituality as they focus primarily on science. It becomes such a dominating force in the Western culture. I mean, it is displaced, at least in any serious thinking. It had displaced the Catholic Church. It had displaced religion. It had displaced mythology. And was remaking society pretty much top to bottom. And again, the thing about both the negative and the positive extrapolationists is both of them had some degree of the truth. There were some very positive things about modernity, which we call the dignity of modernity. And there were some very negative things about modernity, which generally referred to as the disaster of modernity. But this has been going on back and forth now for several hundred years. And then recently, starting in around the 60s, a third school emerged, which is generally referred to as a transformational school. And it was essentially green. And looked at there being some truth to both the positive and the negative view, but they really focused on a coming transformation in world consciousness that was going to be, among other things, deeply spiritual. And this transformation would be backed by a new paradigm thinking, a new view of the universe and the world, and was generally positive in its orientation. And in a certain sense, although they were largely a kind of New Age thinking, they were closest to evolutionary schools of thinking in terms of their overall background. Because you can be an evolutionary thinker without necessarily seeing everything as being positive. Evolution has produced some wrong turns, and there have been plenty of extinctions, and it's common to say that humans could go the same route as the dinosaurs, and so on. But the transformational school did hold open the possibility that things were getting better and tended to look at it in a sort of a romantic fashion, but also in a deeply spiritual fashion. Nonetheless, to the school as a whole, it's always remained very close to science. And one of the main reasons is that technological evolution has been easy to trace, and it seems to sort of follow a steady curve. Whether you think about it as Moore's Law, or whether you follow Ray Kurzweil, or however you want to look at it, the idea is that technology is simply becoming more and more and more and more powerful. And therefore, any thought about the future has to take that into account. We don't know which way religion is going, but we do know that technology will continue to grow. So if we're going to think about the future, let's focus on technology, and that particularly recently means things like robotics and genetics and nanotechnology. This can also produce schools of thought that are very positive and schools of thought that are very negative. Bill Joy caused a bit of a stir when he wrote that essay on Does the Future Need Us? And he talked about all of the calamities that nanotechnology and genetics and robotics could produce, including the famous gray goo that would spread all over the planet's surface, dissolving all living forms. And that is theoretically possible. So, and he maintained that anything that was theoretically possible would eventually be done in fact. So he came down on the side of just outlawing research on all of this stuff. But unfortunately, that won't work, because there are always places like China or the Philippines that will keep doing the research. So we're headed into times where a lot of the people sort of in our field and in spiritual training tend to think about the future in terms of a spiritual transformation or even a new paradigm. But they tend to think in terms of the left-hand quadrants. But it's important for us to think about it. In addition to the left-hand quadrants, it's important for us to think about the right-hand quadrants as well. And these changes in technology that are coming our direction and coming very, very fast. Ray Kurzweil estimates that within about 30 years, we'll hit the so-called singularity. And singularity basically means an event so enormous and so powerful that it changes the laws of existence at virtually all levels. And so this is what you get when you extrapolate the rate of increase of technological discovery year by year by year by year. It almost without exception in any field you look at doubles about every year and a half, and has continued to do so for a couple decades and shows no sign of slowing down. And so Kurzweil sees a point where problems that we can't think about how to solve right now will be able to be solved by the machines once they hit a certain level of data crunching capability. And we've already hit the point, I think, where a computer has been built that contains the amount of information that you find in a single human brain. And the singularity occurs right around the time that you'll find the amount of data in computers surpasses the amount of information in all human brains combined. And in that narrow technical sense, the machines will be smarter than humans. Now, we just don't know what will happen then. You can indeed take the negative position that the machines will take over humanity. like the Matrix. You can also take the positive position, like Kurzweil, that the machines will still essentially do what we want and will solve problems that we can't even begin to think about how to solve ourselves. Now, the important thing that any sort of integral thinker would bring to the picture is, well, let's make sure we look at this singularity through an integral lens. Let's make sure we're including all quadrants, all levels, all lines, all states, all types. I mean, what good is it if the Nazis have the singularity? No good at all. As a matter of fact, bad, very bad. So it's important that we do think about the technological side of the future to supplement the really enormous amount of thinking that spiritual and new paradigm thinkers have already done about the future from the left-hand quadrants, and tending to leave out the technological components. So what we want is an all-quadrant view of what the future could be bringing our way. And if at all possible, of course, we want to meet whatever those developments are with an integral understanding. So what kinds of problems do we want to present to the machines to solve? I mean, the certain obvious ones we're facing now, like global warming and food shortages and stuff, that goes without saying. But what about problems like how to increase the amount of interior development, how to include states and structures in our educational system, or how to help cultures evolve from egocentric to ethnocentric to world-centric. Otherwise, the technology is just going to be in service of wherever humanity finds itself. And right now, 70% of humanity finds itself at ethnocentric or lower levels. So future studies has been something that's new to the integral scene. It was introduced by Richard Slaughter about a decade ago. An entire issue of Futures was devoted to integral approaches to future studies. And there are now about 8 schools of future studies, 2 in each quadrant. So we're still looking to kind of bring them together a little bit more and have a little bit more integral approach. But it's such a wild card, and the possible consequences are so enormous, that among the voices on how to handle it, we really want to try to make sure that spiritual and integral voices are part of that dialogue. Because otherwise, as we can see looking at the world today, they're not part of any major international dialogue. They're not part of terrorism. They're not part of global warming. They're not part of the economic crisis. The spiritual and integral approaches are more or less completely ignored. And that's as big a disaster as anything for the future. I think that's sort of the point about once you adopt an evolutionary viewpoint and your mind just sort of follows that curve, then it does open up that door. The way you approach the present isn't just determined by the way you approach the past. It's the way you approach the future. And so sort of the richer a conception of the future that you have, the richer your life in the present becomes. And that's a really interesting idea.